Good morning.
Well, good morning, Faye. How are you?
I'm wonderful.
It's a little bit nicer this weekend. I know we've had some touch-and-go weather lately, but I think, really, for the next 5 or 6 days or so, we should be hovering between the 60s and 70s. It kind of depends. You maybe go from like 65 to 72 and then down to 61 and then down to 75. So it'll be all over the place, but still not like what we've seen so far this season. Should be pretty nice.
Let me tell you something. It's going to take a week for me to thaw out. I'm not even thawed yet. I mean, you know, it's been a rough week, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It's been awfully cold. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it'll be next Thursday or Friday before I thaw out.
Well, then get ready, because once we get into winter, I don't know what you're going to do.
I don't know.
You'll be frozen until February or July.
I don't know what I'll do till then. I'm thinking of all kinds of ways to heat things up, you know, other than setting the forest on fire.
Or moving to the Caribbean.
That's right.
Yeah.
I'm still considering that.
You would miss Texas, and you know it.
I would. I'd miss the shopping, wouldn't I?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And my llamas would be looking at me like, what are we doing here on an island, you know? Oh, my gosh. Right.
You'd have to take the llamas with you if you went down to the Caribbean.
Oh, yeah. The llamas would have to go. The whole tribe would go. Can you imagine the whole Bagby tribe having to move to the Caribbean?
Pack up the caravan, kind of like the Beverly Hillbillies trekking down to the Caribbean.
That's right. It would be, because you'd see all this stuff just stacked and falling out of boxes.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
parade of llamas right behind you.
That's right, and you know. I don't know if I don't believe they're ready for us. I'll just be honest.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I don't think they're ready for the Bagbies.
Of course, you could do a reality TV show from the Caribbean.
I see. And me, the llamas, the grandchildren, the children.
Yeah.
It'd be pretty interesting.
It would be interesting. All right. That would. That's
it
what,
would be.
That's what primetime drama is made out of.
Well, you know, we have this one little grandson that has ADHD. Mm-hmm. Now, I've never had a child or not even known anybody that had learning disabilities like this. And we get a note from the teacher. She said, this is what all he did today. He locked me out of the room. He was jumping on the furniture. I mean, it just it went down from there. I go, he locked you out of the room. Yes, he said he locked me out of the classroom. Oh, my gosh. And was jumping on the furniture. Wow. I mean, I just can't imagine.
Yeah. Yeah, see, I definitely see reality TV in your future now.
The teacher this year is 24. She doesn't know what in the heck to do.
Yeah.
Now, last year they had a mature lady. She knew exactly what to do, you know. She made him go out and walk the track, do things that will help him. You know, they have to get exercise immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And this teacher doesn't know what to do. And when she told me he was jumping on the furniture, I was appalled. I said, and what did you do? You know, I mean, you know, it just, and it's downhill from there.
Oh.
She said yesterday, he told her he wasn't coming in to play. And she was having to drag him back into the classroom.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, at home, you know, that wouldn't have worked, you know. he would not have been allowed to do all that.
No, that's not going to fly at the Bagby home.
Nope, would not. And it wouldn't have been just time out, I can tell you. Oh, my gosh. And this poor little young teacher. You know, she just doesn't know what to do. But I couldn't believe a kid could lock a teacher out of the classroom.
No, I didn't know.
In first grade.
Oh, first grade.
First grade.
My goodness.
Oh, yeah, he's a first grader.
I thought he was older than that.
Oh, no, he's just in the first grade. He's a little kid.
Well, then you got to give him credit for you know, being able to think things through and coming up with with a solution to something.
With a solution. Oh, my gosh. You know, they have a tree there at school. The other day, he got his foot caught, and he's hanging upside down in the tree.
Oh, boy.
Oh, my. If I had this kid in school, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Part of you wants to panic, and then part of you finds it kind of funny.
It was hilarious. If it wasn't so bad, it was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Because I just never heard of a kid doing all this and jumping on the furniture. Wow! I mean, golly.
He had some energy to burn off, apparently.
That's right. And I wanted to tell her, if you just had a fly swatter and threatened him, he wouldn't do all that.
Yeah.
You know, that's all it takes.
Yeah, a fly swatter or wooden spoon. They can be magic.
Yeah, just show it to him. You don't have to use it on him. Just show it to him. And I think it would. You know, I think it changed his attitude real quick.
Changed his attitude.
Yeah. Oh, he needs an attitude adjustment pretty bad. Oh, my gosh.
Oh,
but, you know, you send these grandkids to school with such high anticipation. Then you find out a little kid does all this, and you just lose it. You know, what am I doing?
Yeah.
You know, it's not going too well.
It's so far away from your goals and your perception. It just goes bad.
I want some perfect grandchildren, and this kid is so far from perfect, it's unreal. I don't know. So, like you said, we could go to the Caribbean, have a reality show, and people would never believe it.
Oh, yeah. They'd think it was fake and scripted.
Oh, yeah. They wouldn't know. This is the real deal.
Yeah. But we love them anyway.
We love them anyway. It's hard, but we do love them.
Yeah. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And write the number down. I have people that have been listening to me for a long time. And then they don't write the number down. Then they go into a panic when they need to call.
Yep.
So they need to write that number down and keep it handy.
And that is your office number, by the way. And so
that is the office number. And if the radio station gets it wrong and you happen to be calling them, say, are you sure that's the number? You know, be sure that girls know the number. I mean, you know, we've been on the radio 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody should know the number at the radio stations.
So one more time, slowly, what is your number?
It's 877-588-3330.
Perfect. Obviously, there's nobody at the office on the weekend, but, you know, first thing Monday. In fact, if people wanted to call right now, they could still leave a message for you, right? And then you'll call
they
them back.
They could leave a message, yes.
Yeah.
But if they call on Monday morning, my secretary will answer the phone, and that's Tina. We don't ever talk about her, but she is in charge of phones. She answers the phone. She can book appointments. She can do all kinds of things.
She's very quick, too. Every time I call over there, she's real quick to answer the phone. So it doesn't ring forever and ever and ever.
No. And unless all the phones are busy, you know, they're going to answer right away.
Yeah, yeah. That's important.
It's important. And she can make appointments. She knows if I've already got appointments on a certain time. And she knows my schedule.
So people are saying, make an appointment for what? Well, this is all about the dirty I word, investing and getting ready for the other dirty word, the R word, retirement. And I know it's scary and intimidating to a lot of people. It's not fun. They say, I'll just put it off. And like you always say, people procrastinate. And so what happened this week? Did people come see you? What did people get started?
I had several people come see me. I had some people that were lost, and that's okay. You know the address, but let's give that again, too. It's 3105 Big Spring. Always remember, it's on Big Spring Street. It's right next to Ivy Cottage.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've been next to Ivy Cottage all these years, for 10 years. So if people are coming, if you get lost, remember, you're on Big Spring Street. It's on the right-hand side of the road, which is the west side. and it's right next to Ivy Cottage.
Yeah, yeah. You always say that. That's the big locator right there, right next to Ivy Cottage. So,
that's right.
When people come see you, what kinds of questions do they ask? So for the people that came to see you this week, what were their concerns? What were their questions?
Well, the main question was, how does the investment work? Now, you know, I always think if they've been listening a long time, a lot of people walk in and say, I've been listening to you. I know how it works. Just sign me up. But the people this week were saying, well, tell me exactly how the investment works. So I went through it, and I hope they understood. I believe they did. And I explained to them it is a life insurance investment. We invest in life insurance policies on people that have stage 4 cancer. That's all we do is stage 4 cancer. And some of the questions were, have you ever had anyone cured? No, we've had some delayed, but we haven't ever had anybody cured if it's stage 4. Okay, if it's stage 2, it might be cured, or stage 3, but I've never heard of anybody with stage 4 being cured. The other questions were, what can I make on my money? What kind of interest will I be paid? So I explained it to them that if it's a 24-month policy, you would make 24%. It's 1% per month. So if it's an 8-month, you're going to make 8%. If it's 15 months, you'll make 15%. Then I explained to them what the risks were. I said, first of all, the biggest risk is if the policy goes over, what the premiums are. And they were concerned. What would a premium be? They'd never heard of a premium. They didn't know. And I explained to them it could be $1,000, it could be $500, you know, or it could be a lot less than that. So that's your big thing. Then the second thing I explained to them is it's not liquid until it matures. That part they got.
Okay.
They knew that if it was invested, you know, you're not going to have it in cash. Then they said, this is another big thing. What if in a couple, 4 years, I need some cash? Well, you tell us, and we'll keep that much of your interest in cash rather than investing it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We wouldn't invest it that second year or third, whenever it is, fully. When some of them matured, we'd keep some cash in your account.
Yeah, so they do have some access to some funds if they need it.
That's right. You can always get access as long as it's in cash.
All right.
So and that was it. And then they wanted to know which kinds of cancer were the most prevalent. And we've just done a study on breast cancer. You know, just finished that up. We've done 8 million in breast cancer policies since 14.
Wow, 8 million.
Yes, 8 million. And 3 of them have come in late.
Wow.
Of all those policies.
Of all those, you've only had 3 that came in late. And I'm guessing they weren't.
3 come in late.
They probably weren't all that late to begin with at that, right? I'm assuming.
No. I think one was a year late. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember the other two, but they were late. But then we've had all these others. And I forgot to look to see how many came in early. But we've had a lot of them that came in early. You know, we had that one last month that came in after 4 months.
Yeah.
Yeah. The lady was 69 years old. So they were asking, you know, what kind of cancers do you really, you know, do the most of? And I said, that and pancreatic cancer. Because if it's pancreatic, it's usually about a 9 to 12 month policy.
Hmm.
If they cannot operate. Now, if they can operate, it'll be 24 months. But most of them are inoperable because of where it is.
Yeah.
So, and then colon cancer is next. And I would say lung cancer is about number 4 with us.
Really?
We probably don't do as many of them as we do of the other.
Hmm.
And if it's lung cancer, we want to be sure it's metastasized to the lower extremities. Either in the ribs, the sternum, you know, or even in the liver.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing about all of our cancer policies. If it's metastasized to the lower part, you know, that means it will be a short policy. If it hadn't metastasized yet, it will be longer. So that's the things you have to read about and study about to see, you know, where this policy is going to fall.
So when people come see you for the first time, like these people this past week, Do they try to request a certain type of policy?
No, because they're new at it. And like they all said, they all said the same thing. Well, we're new at this. We would have to rely on your judgment because we don't know what to look for. And that's true. You know, a new person coming in wouldn't know what to look for. Somebody that's been with us 4 or 5 years reads the LEs just like I do, and they study it. You know, we have a lot of people that study the LEs. You wouldn't think they do, but they do study it. They are concerned, and, you know, they want to make the best decision on their investments. So they do the same thing I do. They read it and reread it, and then sometimes they'll call.
And LE is a life expectancy, right?
Yes, the life expectancy of this person. And remember, if it's under a million, we have one life expectancy. If it's over a million, we've got two.
So you have it's almost like you have multiple opinions to make sure you get a complete picture of the policyholder.
That's right. We do want multiple opinions if it's large, because we want to be sure we've got the right policy and that we're getting the right one for the clients.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we want to make sure it's going to come in as close to what we say as possible.
Yeah. What about?
And of course, most of ours do.
What about when people kind of go through the process? You know, a couple of years down the road, do they read the policies as much anymore? Or do they kind of slack off and just say, "If you say it's good, put me in."
Well, and I've noticed people have different ideas. I've got a lot of people when we say the raise is $80,000. They say, okay, put me in for 80. Now, I've got some, as I said, they say, no, I'm not doing but 50,000. And so everybody has a different opinion as to how to invest their money. And then we've got a lot of them that just say, whatever you say, you know, that you want going in, I'm in. Put me in.
Okay.
And I have a lot of them that respond immediately, said, yes, I want to go in your next policy. I've been waiting.
Okay, so really it doesn't matter where anybody falls on it, how involved they want to get, how non-involved they want to get. It doesn't matter. Everybody can participate and do just fine and make money.
That's right. And what I notice is people, brand new people, get antsy. They want to get all that money invested as quick as possible. And sometimes you can't do that. Sometimes you're waiting. It hadn't closed yet. You know, there's other legal papers we're having to get, and it may delay getting that policy, you know, 20 days.
Mm-hmm.
And so lots of times we tell them, we'll have it to you soon, but we're not ready to close on it. You know, we're doing this, we're doing the legal. And then sometimes, you know, we've had two rescind, and they can do it. You know, at 15, or that other state's got 60 days.
Oh, really, 60?
They've got a 60-day window. It's only, and I don't even remember which state it is, but there's only one that has that. Everybody else is 15 days. After you write the contract, they've got 15 days to say, well, I'm going to keep it and just wait it out.
Mm-hmm.
But every once in a while, this will happen. We had two. They're both small. And so we replaced them immediately. We had other policies coming in, and we just replace those immediately.
Okay, so there's really no loss or anything like that. It's just getting
different
policy.
It's a loss of time is all.
Yeah.
You know, you lost that little bit of time, which it'll make up for as soon as we put you in another one. It'll, you know, it's still going to be great.
Okay.
So it's just a matter of a few days. But that can happen.
How long should somebody wait when they come see you for the first time, you know, kind of like these people this week? And I'm sure it was one of these questions, but on average, how long until a new investor can get into an actual policy? I know availability has something to do with it, but generally speaking.
Well, generally speaking, it's, you know, 2 to 3 weeks that we'll have you in a policy. Now, we were real lucky. We had several people last month to come, and they got in immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't always happen. But we just happened to have a great big policy we were working on, and they wanted in immediately, and we had room for them.
Wow.
Okay? But lots of times, you know, like this summer, we've probably done $15 million in policies.
That's incredible.
It is. It's an incredible amount. And there were some weeks we did three at a time.
Uh-huh.
So we've invested a lot of money rather quickly this summer. And now we're getting ready to close on two policies that I know of. And one is called Birch. And we're trying to get it ready to close. And also, I'm trying to think of the name, but there's one policy, $1.6 million, that should be at the bank next week.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, the bank should have that ready next week.
When people start this and they think, okay, I understand, you know, it's a life insurance policy. Do you think that maybe they don't actually really understand that this is not like a, you know how you go to the store and you may want to buy cans of soda, and you can pretty much always count on the fact that when you walk in, there's just, you know, maybe 10, 20 bottles of soda ready for purchase at any time. That's not how this works. It kind of depends on the policies that come in, what's available, you know, what the market's like. There may be times where you have more, there may be times you have less. Is that an accurate description of, like, availability?
That's right. And sometimes we have more than we can say grace over. And then, you know, sometimes people call and we say, you'll have to wait. We don't have a policy today. Mm-hmm. You know, we're bidding on them, but we haven't gotten the bids back. They haven't approved us on those bids. We didn't win yet. And, you know, we're bidding on at least four policies every week of our life. You know, we're always bidding on policies. And sometimes they let us know in 30 days. Sometimes it's 2 weeks. You know, you never know when you're bidding on policies how soon it'll close.
Yeah.
And how soon you'll find out if you got it, you know.
Yeah. There's not a bunch of policies sitting on a shelf in the back office ready to
go. No.
It moves
because
fast.
Because if we have policies ready, we're putting them out immediately.
Cool.
Because our clients, that's what they expect us to do. In order to make money, we've got to keep that investment rolling.
So there's no waiting around. There's no, you know, as policies come in, boom, you're filling them, onto the next. Boom, filling them, onto the next. It's not like anything's waiting around for whatever. It's they're in, they're out. So this is a fast-moving process, right?
It is. Now, the only thing that slows it down is we send out emails and say, okay, do you want in? Sometimes people out in the field, they don't get back to us. And if they don't get back within 2 days, we have to go on to somebody else. So they may not get in that policy. They may have to get in another one.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens all the time because we'll give them 2 days. But then if we don't hear from them, we call them to make, and if we don't reach them then by phone, lots of times if we're trying to close, we have to go on to somebody else.
All right, so people don't have to worry about if they're at the grocery store and they miss something, you know, and they don't get back and see the email until, you know, maybe an hour later. They're not missing out. It's not like they're passed over and they got to wait, you know, 3 more weeks. It's you give them a pretty good window to get back to you.
Oh yeah, they've got 2 to 3 days, and that's it. I mean, after that length of time, no, we really will. And there was a couple, 3 people that did not get in that policy the other day. And they finally got back to us, and we said, we're sorry, you know, you've missed out, but we'll get you in the next one. And that does happen sometimes. And sometimes it works perfectly. Everybody sends us an email back and says, okay, I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we try to do that for people.
What happens when somebody misses one and you say, okay, we'll put you in the next one? How long does that usually take?
Well, it may take 2 weeks, maybe it takes 3.
Okay.
Yeah, but it'll be quick, you know. I mean, and we'll let them know just as soon as possible, you know, what policy we're working on that we could put them in.
Okay. So to relay the investment to people who haven't done this before, to say, okay, you can invest in a life insurance policy, how should they think of it? Should they relate to it? Okay, you as an investor, person, you know, Joe Smith, want to come in, you want to invest. It's like you have a policy yourself. You have a life insurance policy. If something were to happen to you and you were to sell it, then you would sell it, and then other people would buy into it. It's like that. I mean, that's how it kind of works from that side of the fence, right?
That's exactly right. So take yourself. If you had a dreaded cancer and you needed money, you could come to us. We would buy your policy, you know, if it was stage 4. So, and the other thing is, if you're going, everybody that carries life insurance should understand how this works. If you passed away, your family would get the money from that life insurance policy. But if you sold the policy, our clients would get the money from that policy instead of your family.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way it works.
So people will sell their policy because they've been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. And we know how expensive that is. We know what the metrics are. We've seen the numbers for decades. And so you have literally years and years and years of data to back this up. So people who are diagnosed with stage 4 cancer a lot of times need to come up with a fast lump of cash to be able to afford the treatments quickly. And so that's why they sell their policy most of the time. Is that right?
Yes, unless it's a large policy and they're doing it just to settle the estate because they know they're not going to be here for about a year. But other people, they know it's $100,000 a month to keep them going on cancer treatments. I was telling people the other day that the pills of one of my clients runs $27,000 a month, and that's ridiculous.
Wow.
But a lot of the insurance companies won't cover that. They're not going to cover a $27,000 a month pill. So they've got to raise a lot of money for it because, you know, if they had a $250,000 policy, that won't even cover it.
Yeah, they have to pay a lot of it out of their own pocket.
That's right. And there's more bankruptcies over people having cancer than any other disease. People have to declare bankruptcy because they just flat run out of money if they don't have a life insurance policy to sustain this.
That is such a shame.
It is. It's wrong. Spend all your life working and trying to get somewhere. Then you get something this bad, and then they explain to you how much it costs. You know.
Wow.
And, if you want to do the stem cells, all this other, it's just enormously expensive.
Wow. So that's why. So it's not like anybody's going in and commandeering anybody's life insurance policy. They choose to. They have to sell it. They need the money to fight their cancer. And then from an investor's point of view, you're looking at this because stage 4 cancer is so deadly. It can be so aggressive. And we know the numbers on this, too, because you have decades of data to back this up. And so that's why you only bid on stage 4 cancer is because you know what, you know, how the prognosis is going to go, as opposed to like stage 1 or stage 2.
That's right. We know that they're a long way off of stage 1 or 2. And there is people that buy them. There's other companies that'll buy stage 1 or stage 2. It may be 10 years away. So you've got to pay those premiums all that time. So, you know, we do stage 4. We're trying to buy the ones with the cheapest premium. And as you know, we won't go over 3%. And lots of times, like we bought two that were like 0.97, not even 1%.
Wow!
And when it's that cheap, everybody should jump in that policy.
Yeah,
because your exposure is just non-existent.
Yeah, that's a big opportunity right there.
It is. It's really a great opportunity.
So when people see this and they say, okay, well, you know, Faye, I see these people on TV all the time, and they're elderly people, maybe in their 60s, you know, the golden sunshine is behind them, and wheat fields of wheat are blowing in the wind behind them, and they're so happy, and they're in their RV, and they're traveling around, and they're going to sell their policy. That's not what you're buying. You buy stage 4, only stage 4. Like you said, you know, those elderly policies, people buy those, and it may be years and years and years. So I would imagine the profit margin is quicker on a stage 4 cancer policy. I would imagine probably the payout time is much quicker with a stage 4 cancer policy, and that right there is a win-win for investors, right?
That's right. Our investors are not interested in a 7 to 10 year, 15 year deal. A lot of people are. They'll buy those senior deals. I get advertisements all the time, and they say, we are in the senior market. And, man, we delete that so fast, it's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to know about their senior market. I don't want to know about the 90 and 95-year-olds. We've still got those three that I talk about all the time. And so, you know, we're not interested in a senior experience. We've already had that. And so then, you know, we don't think we could do that again. So we avoid it like the plague. We're interested in a short-term policy. That's what our clients want. They want a quick turnover. 30 months is about the limit we'll go.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I mean, you know, you take 2.5 years for people to make the kind of money that they are. I don't know of any other opportunity off the top of my head, anyway, where you can get that kind of a return in that amount of time, turn around, reinvest it, and get that money growing like that. I can't think of anything else. Can you?
No, I can't. But that works like this. It works well. Like I said, our people will put money in, then they'll come back and put money in again and again because they're making money and they like the way it works and they want the availability of the investment. And a lot of them said, "Faye, we used to be in the stock market. We just don't feel comfortable there anymore." Mm-hmm. And I think that's age. I think when you get older, you say, you know, I've taken about all the risks I can stand.
Yeah. Yeah, because they realize. Do people remember 2008? Do they remember losing as bad as so many people did, and they don't want to take that risk again, or has that kind of faded from people's memory?
Well, I think it does kind of go away a little bit, unless you were really on the really receiving end of that. You know, all those that lost a lot of money now that they're older, they remember, and they don't want to go back and do it again. I've had people tell me, "Faye, we've done it several times. We can't do it again." You know, they said they've been in on 3 downturns. And, you know, if you've been in on 3, you're going to be a lot more cautious.
Yeah, yeah. You get a little bit gun-shy after that. It's like, oh, I don't know if we can do this much more. Now, we'll talk about how the life settlement is part of a plan. This is not you get in, you invest, and then you get out and you retire next week. This is part of a retirement plan. We'll get into how the big picture works here in just a few minutes. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. I'm hoping I'm saying it slow enough for people to write the number down.
And you're located at
3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
Now every Saturday morning,
folks,
you're gonna make it as plain as possible. You're trying to make everything as easy as you possibly can, and that's great.
Well, that's right. We haven't set up a red flag, but you know, we could put a flag on the building if it's necessary.
Maybe you should. That might not be a bad idea.
Okay, I'll give that some thought.
Look for the big red flag in the sky.
That's right. Or we might put a Pegasus up there. You remember the red Pegasus?
No, you don't see that every day.
That mobile sign in downtown Dallas all those years had the horse that turned, if you remember. I don't know if you remember that.
I don't remember.
You probably don't. But that was a Dallas landmark. The horse was up there, and they called it Pegasus, and it turned on this big sign.
Well, there you go.
And it was famous. It was up there for years and years.
Get a spinning unicorn. That'll get people's attention.
That's exactly right. you know, and they dress up llamas and put unicorns on their noses, you know? It's crazy.
Wow. Now, every Saturday morning around this time, we get into trivia, and you always bring interesting, fun things. So what is our topic this morning?
It's the do's and don'ts of Thanksgiving lunch.
Oh, Thanksgiving is, what, a week and a half away?
That's right. So now is the time to talk about it. You know, the things you should do and the things you should not.
Okay.
Okay? The first thing is do not use paper plates. Not now, not ever. This is Thanksgiving, your best china, please.
Yeah.
The other thing is do not invite more people than you have china for. That's a real no-no. Don't do it. Do not let your husband come home at the last minute and say, "I've invited 3 extra couples."
Wow.
I mean, it's too late. You've already got your menu. You know how much you're going to cook for. Do not let them do it. Another thing, another don't. All these people that are always late, there's always one couple that are an hour late, okay? Tell them the wrong time.
Oh.
Don't tell them the correct time.
Oh.
And then you'll get them there on time. Now then, there's always somebody that's early. And it disrupts everything. You're trying to get everything finished. You're busy. You don't need these people standing over your shoulder, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Tell them the wrong time. Give yourself a 30-minute window, okay? Now then, you want everything to look perfect when they walk in, right?
Yes.
But you've got this sink full of dirty dishes.
Ooh.
Put it in a pan, hide it in the closet.
And don't forget about it later.
Don't forget about it later, but put it in the closet.
Yeah.
They'll think you're perfect. Perfect hostess, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Now then, the other thing, don't make something you've never made before. You could have a total disaster right there in your hands.
Yeah, yeah.
Years ago, I decided to do something different. I was only going to have one meat, and I bought this goose and cooked it. Do you know what happens to a goose when you cook it?
No.
It turns to soup. I took it out of the oven. My family was just horrified. Then they started laughing at me and go, "Is that what you're going to serve for dinner?"
Right.
I'm going, "Oh, my gosh, what a mistake, what a mistake." So never cook goose. It will turn to soup.
So what did you do? Did you serve soup?
That's all I had. I mean, I had to serve the dadgum thing, and there wasn't anything left. So that was not one of my better deals. Another thing I've seen somebody do in my kitchen, like if you're making pecan pies,
mm-hmm.
And you make sure that you've got two good pot holders when you take that sucker out of the oven.
Oh.
I saw someone drop a pecan pie in the middle of the floor.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah, it can happen. You know, you talk about accidents. So always 2 to 3 of those pies in case one of them gets dropped.
You need a backup
and then
pie.
You need a backup on everything you do. Now then, check your linen to make sure it's clean. You don't want to have napkins and you look at it the day and go, "Oh my gosh, that's got a big spot on it."
Mm.
The week before, you check all your linens. Make sure there's no spots, that they're fresh from the cleaners.
Yeah, yeah. You don't want to have nasty stains on your linens for Thanksgiving.
No. The other thing is, make sure the table is set at least a week before.
Really?
You don't want to run in there. Yeah. It makes it real pretty. You get your napkins, your tablecloth, your beautiful placemats that goes with it, everything, and put it on the table. You can forget about all that. And then you've got your flowers ordered for the table. Then that's all you have to do is put them on. And then your serving dishes.
Hmm. And I assume when you mention up the flowers, I assume you do not put those on a week early. You wait until the last minute so they're fresh.
They wouldn't even be good 3 days later.
No.
You need to get them the day before, have them ordered in advance. Then pick them up the day before, bring them in, put the aspirin in them, and put them on the table.
Put the aspirin in them. I've heard that's a thing that helps them stay around longer, stay fresher longer, right?
That's right. And be sure it's cool in there. You don't want it real warm because, you know, they'll bloom too much.
Yeah.
But always have a beautiful centerpiece. Now then, there's always somebody, a blowhard, at ever Thanksgiving. Put them at the other end of the table. Put them down where you can't hear them, you know? Because they know everything. They've been everywhere, done everything, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that person, you don't want them setting up there where you have to hear it. You've heard it every year. And put them down there where you can't hear them, okay? And then there's always a couple that shows up and said, "Oh, my cousin Charlie and his wife came in from New Orleans. I knew you wouldn't mind if I brought them extra."
Oh, unexpected guests are the worst.
Yes, choke them right there. Just choke them down. It's terrible to do that to somebody. I mean, you never take extra guests unless they've been invited. You know? It's rude. Very, very rude.
It is rude, yeah. And it puts people in an awkward position, too. And not to mention, there may not be enough food.
That's right. And then you've already set this beautiful table.
Yeah.
What are you going to do, put them in the kitchen?
Yeah.
And the other thing is, make sure that the giblets have been taken out of the paper and cooked. You don't want to forget, leave those giblets. I know all kinds of horror stories. People leaving the giblets in and then going, oh, my gosh, we forgot to make the giblet gravy. The giblets are in there in paper,
yeah.
You know. And then there's the person who doesn't thaw out the turkey until that morning and thinks, oh, I can get it thawed and cooked. Baby, you cannot do it. It ain't going to work.
No, and you cannot put a frozen turkey in the microwave and thaw it out. That's not going to work either.
That is not going to work. That isn't going to work. But you've got the day before, you've got to have it the morning before. You've got to have it in the refrigerator thawing out.
Yeah.
And the best way to do it is to cook that turkey that night, you know, and then it'll be ready. You won't have any mistakes.
Wow, that's brilliant.
It is. In fact, the more you can do the night before or the afternoon before, do it. And then you've got it cleaned up. You've got the mess gone. And you don't have to look at all that.
That is true. That way you don't have to hide the dishes in the closet.
That's right. You don't have to put them in the closet. The other thing is if you've been doing the green bean casserole for 20 years, you might consider doing something else. I mean, you know, it's been 20 years. They know it's going to be on your table.
That's
There's just no doubt about it, you know. and you know the lady that started the green bean casserole worked for Campbell's Soup.
Did she really?
She worked for Campbell's Soup. She invented it.
Really?
And she's recently died at 92.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that.
Yes. She's the one that developed it. Campbell's Soup was looking for a whole bunch of things. She made it, and she said years later, people would claim that they got that recipe from their mother and their grandmother and all that, and she was laughing. you know? But the original recipe card was donated to the National Inventors Hall of Fame in 2002.
Really? Oh, how cool.
Yeah. But it was in 1955 when she discovered and made the recipe.
Wow, that is like a staple in American culinary food. I was kind of the same way. I was thinking, well, this has been passed down from generation to generation, but I didn't realize it came from Campbell's Soup.
When she discovered it and made it, Campbell's Soup put it on the tomato soup can. It's been there all these years. Yeah. And in 2005, they marked the 50th anniversary.
Wow.
Yeah. And the other thing she did was a tomato soup meatloaf, a tuna noodle casserole, and a sloppy Joe Super Burger.
Man, I would have loved to have been in her test kitchen. Oh.
Oh, yeah. And she said in her home, she always kept those ingredients just in case someone asked her to whip it up. And she said, well, she thought it was so funny. Everybody would say, well, it's Aunt Susie's or Grandma's. And she would just laugh.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, when they'd say somebody's recipe, and she's the one that invented it, and Campbell's Soup put it on their soups, and that's how it got started.
And she didn't try to correct him; she just let him say that.
Yeah, no, she just let it go. You know, she just didn't say a word, and she'd just laugh and say, oh, yeah, sure, your Aunt Susie did that, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But we know that's not the way it happened.
I wonder if she got any royalties off that recipe.
I don't know, but she should have because she was with Campbell's until she retired.
Wow.
I mean, she was there all those years, did many, many recipes in their test kitchens. Can you imagine? They had this huge test kitchen to try everything in the world all those years.
Wow.
And in 1955, as I said, she invented that recipe. And a lot of people, now they, you know, they tell me they don't even want it anymore. They're tired of it. It's finally come to that, you know? But now, I know the green Jell-O recipe that's so famous, and people are unhappy if that does not appear.
Really?
Yes. But now, look, we're in the South. We're in Texas.
Yeah.
And we do things differently than other places. We do not put chestnuts in our cornbread dressing.
Oh, Lord. Who does that?
In the East. At the Eastern deal. They put chestnuts in the dadgum cornbread dressing.
Wow, never heard of that before, and I don't think it sounds very good at all.
It does not sound good. You know, we do cornbread dressing in this part of the country.
Yeah.
We might put a little jalapenos in the cornbread, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But we do ours the old traditional Southern way.
And
I heard someone say that they bought, now this is somebody, an entertainer said, that she buys three turkeys and cooks them, then sends all this meat home with people.
Really?
Yeah, and to me that's just a lot more work. I don't believe I'm up to that. You know? I don't want to have two extra turkeys and sending all that turkey home with anybody.
No, no.
And at
some point, you explode with turkey, and it's like, okay, I don't want to see any more bird for another year.
That's exactly right. And if you're going to try a new recipe, as I said, for gosh sakes, don't try it on Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Because if it goes wrong, everybody in your family knows about it. And the other thing is, never tell anybody you made a mistake. You know, never say, well, I know this is not as good as it should be. Don't tell them that. Say, well, isn't it wonderful? I did a good job. You know? Prop that up. It doesn't matter how it tastes. Prop it up and tell them how great it is.
And they'll probably in turn say, oh, this is amazing, even though they're about to vomit on the inside.
That's right. And if you find something that's disagreeable, keep your mouth shut.
Yeah.
Another thing, don't let anybody bring anything for Thanksgiving dinner. You've planned your menu. You've got it going. And when they say, oh, I'd love to bring this, nah, don't let them do it.
Yeah, that'll throw a kink in the system the whole way.
It will. It'll mess up everything you've got planned. It'll mess up your menu. And the other thing is, not only are some of these people late, but what if they would say, oh, I'll bring the turkey, and they're an hour late, it's going to ruin everything.
Oh, yeah, that would be the worst.
It'd be the worst thing I can make. Don't let them do it. Don't let them bring anything for Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Just say, I've got it under control.
Yeah, not only is the menu at stake here, but so is the timing of the different dishes.
It absolutely is. The other thing is, if these people have little children, you must have a children's table.
Oh, yes, yes.
You've got to have a little children's table. You put that 3-year-old, the 4-year-old, and the 5-year-old at that little table.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, don't put them at the grown-up's table and think they're so cute when they're banging on the table with their spoon.
That's bad behavior, not to be encouraged.
I mean, you know, if they start screaming, let them do it, you know, at their own little table.
Or if you got that guy that knows everything, instead of putting him at the end of the adult table, stick him at the kiddie table.
That's right. Say, you know, we really need a little help over here, and send him over there. You know? And let him pour a little gravy on his head or, you know, something like that. No big deal. Oh, my gosh.
For some reason, Thanksgiving at your house is starting to sound a little cartoonish.
I know. Well, you know, you have to be there to understand what can happen.
I bet there's an adventure all the time.
There is an adventure all the time. It's just, you know, I could write 3 books, not 1 book, 3.
Now, I bet if you follow all these rules, I bet Thanksgiving at the Baby House is probably one of the classiest, well-orchestrated events probably of the entire year. Am I right or am I wrong?
I think so. Not only do I make people dress, you're not going to come to my Thanksgiving dinner without slacks, a long-sleeve shirt on. You're not coming in flip-flops. You know, you're just not going to do it. I have standards, and my standard is, it's a special time of the year. We might want to take photographs. I expect you to come dressed and your children dressed.
Oh, yes. Oh, don't forget the kids, too. Sometimes the parents get all wrapped up in their outfits and making sure that they're properly groomed, and then sometimes they forget the kids.
That's right. And we use the good china on every special occasion. Yes, it has to be hand-washed, but that's just part of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. The glasses cannot be put in the dishwasher. The silverware, the good silverware cannot, and the good china cannot.
Yeah.
And that's okay. That's part of it. And if you have to have, you know, the cheap stuff, then you're just a cheap person. And we don't allow that. We don't allow any cheap people. You got to play by the rules.
So if you go buy paper plates for Thanksgiving, you should probably start growing your money and invest so that next year you're on the good china.
That's right, because if you can't afford good china, you know, you're just out in the cold. I think everybody has good china. A lot of people get lazy and just don't want to put it out.
Right.
You know, they just don't want to do it. And you know, you've got to make your table look good once or twice a year. We do it about four times a year, a lot more than most people. And you know, we have parties, you know.
Yeah.
There's been times I've invited my whole Sunday school class out to my home. And we put up white tents, and we have a catering company come, and we entertain properly, you know.
So are you?
It's a lot of fun.
Are you entertaining at the house this year, or are you going to the country club?
Truthfully, we're going to the country club because that deal has happened to me. That happens to other people. There's some extra people coming. And I go, I'm not cooking for any extra people. But I am having a small private party for just strictly family. And that's already ready. I've already got the linens out. I've got the table done. And that will happen. But it won't be the day of Thanksgiving. It's going to be next week on the 21st.
Wow, that sounds really great. That's another great idea, too. Maybe have two different celebrations. I know sometimes people's schedules can get in the way. It's like, well, we got to go over to so-and-so's house, then we got to go over to so-and-so's house, and then they have four Thanksgiving meals, and they're about to explode, and they don't want any more. Maybe have one on an off day or something. That might not be a bad idea. That's a neat tip, too.
I think it is a good tip because there may be some people you want it one thing and somebody else you want it something else.
Yeah, yeah.
You may not want them all at the same deal.
That's true. For stuffing, you had mentioned dressing, and I heard from somebody the other day that they always go and use homemade bread, whether they get it like a farmer's market or, you know, if they make it themselves, and they say that makes all the difference in the dressing as opposed to like your regular store-bought bread.
Well, and I've never tried it that way. I also use the bagged dressing sometimes mixed in.
Ooh.
Because it has some really good seasoning in it.
Ooh, never thought of that.
It is a great idea. Get you some of the cornbread dressing, stuffing mix, and a little of the other dressing mix, and put that in with your regular dressing, and it will really dress it up, and it gives it a lot of flavor.
Neat. That's a swell idea. That's cool.
Yeah, I love that idea, and I've been doing that for years.
Wow. Well, it sounds like a lot of great tips here for not only hosts, but guests as well. So hopefully everybody will have a wonderful, warm Thanksgiving holiday season this year. And also the same to you and your family, Faye.
Same to you.
This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring.
Right next to
Ivy Cottage.
I knew that was coming. I felt the urge to put that out there. Okay, so this is all part of a retirement plan. When we're talking about these life settlements and investing in life insurance policies, this is not one of these things where people come in and should expect to do one policy, maybe two policies, and all of a sudden they're ready for retirement. Because what is the magic number that people need to be near in order to retire comfortably?
Well, you know, I would start out with $1 million. If you've got $2 million, you're in great shape. But somebody that's going to retire with $300,000, they're not going to make it.
Yeah.
It's just a fact of life. You can't make it on $300,000.
No, you can't.
Because, you know, it just costs too much to live. And the other thing, and I hadn't even mentioned this lately, what if they got sick and one of them had to go to assisted living?
Mm.
And you're looking at several hundred thousand dollars.
Yeah, we don't always talk about these unexpected emergencies that pop up.
That's right. And if that pops up, I mean, it's going to put you out of business. That's what it's going to do.
Yeah. Well.
Because assisted living is very expensive. It's about $7,500 a month.
Wow.
That's what it costs here in Midland.
Goodness gracious.
$7,500 a month. And so, what if you live for 6 years?
Oh, boy. I don't want to do that math, but it's kind of scary. That's a lot.
Yeah. And so, you know, you just need this extra money. There's just no doubt about it. And so, if you retire at 67, which I always say, don't retire before then. But I've got several people who've just worked harder their life. They're tired. They're 59, and they're retiring this year. I have another couple right now that's retiring in March.
Mm.
And he's not old. He's very young. But that's it. That's as far as they're going.
So when people are looking at this and they're saying, well, geez, you know, $1 million, if that's like the minimum, oh, my gosh, I'm going to be, you know, I should have started investing when I was like 5 years old. But that's not true, because doing the life settlement, people can come in and they can make quite a bit of money in a relatively short amount of time. If I've talked to people who said I should have been investing for 20 years and I haven't, that's not necessary. So how long should somebody do something like this in order to actually be ready for retirement?
I'd like to see them do it 7 to 8 years minimum.
Mm. Okay.
And if they've got 10 to 15 years, they've got all the time in the world, and they can really have a really, really great retirement.
Yeah.
And depends on how much. Even if they've only got 5 years, if they're coming to us with like $400,000, it'll still be achievable. If they've got $300,000, it's going to take a little longer. But you've got to have some money. You can't come to us with $50,000.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's not going to be enough.
And
our minimum, we haven't talked about that today, our minimum investment's 100. So you've got to have at least 100,000 that you've accumulated to do this, and then you must become accredited. If you're not accredited, you cannot do this program.
And what does that mean to be accredited?
You must make $200,000 a year, or you must be worth $1 million without your home.
Okay.
And those are pretty good, achievable things. The $200,000 is fairly easy. The $1 million, if you've been working, you know, 25 years, you've probably got that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe $2 million. And if you can't qualify for that, then you know you can do an annuity if you've got $100,000.
All right. So there's other options.
There's other options. Both options are great. It depends your age, what you've got, and what your goals are. We can meet your goals if we get started soon enough, or if you've got a little bit to get us started.
And the great thing about this program, and from what it sounds like that you said in past weeks, is that it's not only just about getting to retirement, it's what happens after retirement. And you say a lot of investors just keep right on going as though, you know, as they did for several years before. They keep going the same way after retirement. They don't miss a beat. They're still growing their money. They're still enjoying their retirement, and they're still investing, and it works on both sides of the fence, right?
It really does. I've got some people fixing to retire, and they're not going to quit investing. They're young. You know, they're in their 60s. They're going to just go right on. So they may invest with us till they're 75,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, make even more money.
And I think I mentioned this last week, and I may not have, but we've lost another client, and his wife does not know anything about his business.
Oh.
I cannot imagine that men do not talk to their wives about their investments.
Yeah.
The wife called me and did not know what she should do. She said, I know my husband has his money with you. What do I need to do?
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, we have to change the account over, first of all, to your name as an inherited IRA. We need a certified death certificate. And, you know, I need to go over everything with you.
Yeah.
And I've got two women. In the last 2 months, they've lost their husbands.
Wow. I'm so sorry about
yeah.
that.
Yes. You know, the first one was cancer. The second one was heart. And it was instant. Mm. So, you know, people should, men especially, if they're 50 years old, they ought to have a cardiologist. You know, they live in a small town, but they do have cardiologists here.
Mm-hmm.
And they should not have just a doctor if you're 50 years old and older. You should have a cardiologist check you out. Because this could have been prevented, I think.
Yeah, yeah, you probably
if it had a cardiologist.
A lot of times it is. That is a good tip. Good tips. So one more time, Faye, for people to come make an appointment to come see you, I assume you have availability this coming week, right?
That's right, unless it gets to 20 degrees. And it's supposed to be warm, by the way, so we should be in good shape.
It should be nice, so hopefully that won't happen. So one last time, Faye, what is your phone number?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.